Shalom, and welcome to Torah to the People, a podcast from Temple Israel in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm Rabbi Micah Greenstein. We hope you enjoy this selection of our sermons, classes, and conversations with inspiring people from across the Bluff City and around the world.
Friends, among all the treasured members in this large family of families named Temple Israel are several people named Katz, whether Jerry, who lit the candles with Liz, or Neely Katz of blessed memory, whose name you'll hear when we remember loved ones lost. Katz is actually an acronym, in case you didn't know, for Kohen Tzedek, priest of righteousness, based on Psalm 132, which reads, "Your priests shall be clothed in righteousness." Now, as a family name, Cohen, as in one of our sound engineers, J. Cohen, which is priest, or Katz, doesn't appear as a family name until the 17th century. But this week's Torah portion in chapters 21 through 24 of Leviticus concerns the priests of Judaism, the Kohens, the Katzes, nearly 4,000 years ago. God enjoins Moses to speak to the priests. Emor, that's the name of the portion. Speak to the priest and tell them the rules for being a priest. And then the portion after that discusses the Jewish holidays we observe to this day, you know, like the fall festival of Sukkot, Passover in springtime, our next holiday 50 days after Passover, recalling the giving of the Ten Commandments, Shavuot. Even the high holidays are in this week, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the reason we're here tonight, the Sabbath, Shabbat. Priests and holidays are what this portion is all about. And the link between the two is clear, reaffirming life. Let me explain. For our early ancestors, the ancient priesthood placed various limitations on the priest, including not having contact with the dead, except for one's closest relatives. In the Reform movement, we no longer divide Jews into three categories of priests, Levites, Israelites, since the Torah also says we're supposed to all constitute a kingdom of priests and be a holy people. But those friends of ours, brothers and sisters, relatives who are Orthodox, who believe themselves to be descended from the ancient priests or Kohanim, still do not enter cemeteries or have any contact with the dead. Why? You have to understand, as Reformed Jewish commentator Rabbi Jeff Salkin notes, that much of the Torah is an attempt to teach our ancestors and us what not to do. In particular, that meant, do not act like the priests in Egypt did, since, as you probably know, much of the Egyptian religion was centered on death. That thing downtown, now that's Bass Pro, the Tomb of Doom. The pyramids were huge tombs in which pharaohs were buried with all their belongings, including their slaves. Among the most important books in ancient Egypt was the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Judaism accepts the reality of death, but it constantly affirms life. That's why, in case you didn't know, the traditional Jewish burial shroud has no pockets to remind us that we take nothing with us from this lifetime into death. Other religions have priests. We're not the only ones who have priests, but ours are the only ones in the world that we know of where priests are not to come into contact with the dead. As Rabbi Shlomo Riskin teaches, Jewish religious leadership must deal with the living and not the dead. We must spend our limited time accessing life-affirming Jewish experiences dedicated primarily to this world rather than worrying about the world to come, which we believe in. Were the priests therefore forbidden from any dealing with any dead people? Not exactly. According to Jewish law, if there are no other Jews who can see to a burial, the priest may do so. Because when compassion is necessary, the priest is always there. It's just that we don't glorify or fixate on death as the Egyptians did. Instead, we show compassion for the dead. Here's the kicker: by carrying on their light, which is why it is more than fortuitous, it is beshert, that after discussing the priests and the Jewish calendar, God commands our people to bring oil for lighting, for kindling lamps regularly, and for establishing the thing in front of you above the ark. The eternal light is in this week, the Ner Tamid, found just above the holy ark, containing the Torah scrolls in every synagogue. And the early rabbis were quick to note a paradox by way of a really good question. They asked this question: why would God need our light? They said, after all, God is the creator. You give light to the celestial and terrestrial beings. You give light to the eclipse. You give light to all who come into this world, and yet you want our light? What our tradition is wrestling with here is how a seemingly insignificant human being can ever hope to make a worthy contribution to the source of all life. What effort on our part really matters in the larger scheme of things? The rabbis of old saw the eternal light as an allusion to the importance of every human soul and to the effort each person can make to transform our own little corner of the world. It's almost like we want Emily to sing "This Little Light of Mine." They imagine God saying to humanity, "Humans, your lamp is in my hand. The question is, shall my lamp be in your hands? If you light my lamp, then I'll light yours." There's a reciprocal relationship between God and humanity, and God needs each of us to keep that light aflame. Our efforts, small though they may seem, are the building blocks for the kind of society and world a God of goodness, justice, hope, and compassion desires. Do our small mitzvah efforts, our little attempts at light in the darkness, really that make that much of a difference? With summer approaching, it's June, 2 weeks from tomorrow. My mind keeps going back to that famous story on the beach. You know, the one where the child is throwing starfish after starfish into the sea. And an older man asks the boy, "Hey, kid, it's a nice thing you're doing, but there are thousands and thousands of starfish out here. You'll never be able to throw them all back. So what difference does it make? Why does it matter?" And the wise little boy picked up a starfish, threw it into the ocean, turned to the older man and said, "It makes a big difference to that one, mister." Small as we are, we can still contribute our own little light to illumine the darkness that threatens to engulf us right now. Our own little candle of hope, goodness, decency, may not be much by itself, but with mine and yours and the people sitting around you, your neighbor, the stranger down the road, maybe Judaism says we can build a blaze that will light the path and help heal a broken world. Because when one light, one soul is stirred to do something for another, it makes God proud. And that's all it takes to live up to that divine image that makes us human. The eternal light, the Ner Tamid, is always facing us when we gather to pray. But God is waiting for us to tend to that flame by adding our own spark. And let us say, amen.